Hello, this is Russ Bickerstaff, a theater guy for the Shepherd Express. This is audio curtains for your ears. I am, once again, Russ Bickerstaff, here interviewing Liz Shipe and
Corey Jefferson Hagen
on their upcoming show, Midnight Clear.
Upon a Midnight Clear,
upon a
tale of Jack Frost.
Okay. I know, it's funny, because, like, and this is jumping way ahead, but in my mind, because of the cast of characters, and nothing else, in my mind, it sort of fused with Rise of the Guardians. I find myself referring to it as Rise of the Guardians. In my mind, I have to stop myself.
No, that's totally fair. And actually, one of the themes when it was written is my roommate, who we have talked about before, really loved Rise of the Guardians. And kind of was like, I want to see something like that. Write something like that. I was like, okay, I'll see what I can do.
So this is for her benefit, really.
Yeah. Everything I write is on some level for Sam's benefit. If I don't think she's going to enjoy it, I typically don't write it. Because I got to live with it then for like 4 or 5 months while I hear about it. Like, I liked this or I hated that. There was something in my capstone project that I still take flack for. Yep. There was a plot point that she just really didn't like, and she brings it up on a regular basis.
So the premise that we're talking about for people who would be unfamiliar with that movie, and there are a lot of them, what exactly are we talking about?
Well, the only real similarity I would say between that film and ours is the fact that Jack Frost is the main character. Other than that, it kind of and we use a couple of other, like, we feature the Sandman for a second as well, but that's pretty much where it ends.
I mean, we mentioned the other characters from Rise of the Guardians. You bring in the Tooth Fairy and the Easter Bunny.
But you don't see them. They're not.
That'd be way too complicated, yeah.
The plot is basically that Jack Frost has been living as a human for a year, as a baker, and he fell in love with this girl named Gwen. He's got to make a decision by midnight on Christmas Eve if he continues on being Jack Frost creating the snow with his brother Wodan, or if he chooses a human life to live it out with Gwen. So those are his options. And there is the impending threat of the Krampus. The reason that Jack Frost creates the snow is to hide the children of the world from the Krampus. The snow is so pure and white that the Krampus can't see through it. So that's the... It's like... So there's an added element of that. But it's, you know, just your basic guy meets girl story.
And only one of them's magical.
Yeah, and I'm sure that there's precedent for that too. But I mean, and another aspect of this is that it's all taking place in this historic.
Yeah, it's all one location again, which is getting more and more interesting. Trying to write for that, I'll tell you that.
It ends up being a party where all these people show up, in a sense.
Yeah, more or less. I mean, you have to find reasons for people to show up on that same night. I wouldn't say it's not like the Sherlock's where it's a party, and it's not like Home for Christmas where it was just unabashed, where it was just like, this is a party. No, it's more, there are very legitimate reasons why people show up when they show up. Yes. I'm trying to think if there's a better way to say that, but I don't think there is.
Yeah, you just glossed over... Woden, his brother?
Yes, sir, and that's...
I know that's a really weird family, but my... but I that's kind of new for me. Is that from legend?
Yes and no. Jack Frost never had a brother in legend. I kind of created it because I wanted to have a relationship there. Woden is actually the Norse precursor to Old Man Winter.
Right.
So...
Yeah, because I remember, like, they had... It was the Allfather, and then he became, like, sort of fused with... There was a group of people who were worshipping Santa Claus.
Yeah, and that's basically that group of people.
That was,
yes.
Yeah, that was the fusion between our Saint Nick and Odin, you know, was that...
Yeah.
And that's why he's got a beard and he's big and, yeah.
All those things. And so I kind of like... And David Franz is playing Wodan, and I just thought it would be really funny if Jack gave him a nickname... That was Old Man Winter, and it stuck, and he really hates it, so he's not an old man at all. That is touched on the play quite a bit.
A couple times.
Yeah, we go over
it. It's a little fun.
And I really just wanted this... Because Jack Frost is less sprite-ish than he should be. Wodan is actually probably the more traditional Jack Frost archetype that we'd be looking at, where he's very... he's not serious at all. He likes just hitting on anything that's there. And, okay. You know, like, he's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
And David's really good at it. You'd have to ask him. Corey's in more of the rehearsals than I am.
Yeah, I mean, she's off doing Who Killed Santa, so I'm there every night. But it's great because David Franz and I vaguely look alike, so playing brothers is not too far out of the norm for us.
So and they sound alike, too. They have very similar vocal textures.
Cool. Which we've heard for years. Ever since I went to Whitewater, where he also went, it was just constantly, you remind me of David Franz. And I was always like, all right, I do not know who this person is. And then I met him, and I was like, I can kind of see this, okay. Then we ended up at a party, and you were like, you've got this show coming up. And I was like, all right. And then he's like, I want a show. And you're like, you have it too. And we were like, yes. And then we find out we're playing brothers, and we're like, yes, this is going to be awesome. But he doesn't take anything seriously in the show. It's just, I mean, we have a couple moments that are a little serious, but it's mainly just he is just fun and makes all these comments, and you have to, you just kind of like, all right, enough. Something is happening. Stop hitting on that.
That's interesting because, you know, like the idea of like the immortals being, you know, I never really could get behind the idea of like people with that kind of power having any kind of discipline at all. I mean, because if you're immortal, it doesn't matter. So, I mean, is that sort of what's going on here? Is like he's trying, you know, it's almost, it could be like a coming of age thing.
I'd say that's exactly what it is.
Where he's got to decide whether he wants to.
Yeah, whether or not he wants to continue, because it's also, I think it plays upon the themes a little bit of, you know, what is immortality? Like, that could get very boring after a while, and I think that's what Jack has kind of discovered. He's like, as much as I love my brother, and as much as I love that aspect of it, it's never ending. Like, humanity has this great, everything is new for them. It's going to end, so they always, they tend to, and that's something you, there's a monologue.
You have a great little monologue about that. It's great that Jack is trying to explain to his brother why he wants to be mortal, and that it's because humans are so exciting, because every moment is new to them, and they don't know how much longer they have left on this earth, so they just live. And it's just great, because he's trying to explain to his brother why he would want to stop being this immortal being, and why he wants to go and be just a person. And it's very, very touching, because you have a great brother moment at that point where Rodan kind of really understands where Jack's coming from, as opposed to just thinking, you left me, so now I hate you, but I've missed you, so now I'm back.
Yeah, Wodan's slightly bipolar.
Okay.
A little bit.
And then there's we also do see the Krampus, and the Krampus is one of those things that people kind of know peripherally about Christmas, but not a whole lot about. In traditional lore, it's this really creepy horned creature with hooves that comes and takes bad children away on Christmas Eve.
So with the giant bag with the children sticking out of it.
Yeah. For this version, we've changed it. The Krampus kind of became more all of the bad children thing. So it's like the monster under the bed. It becomes the boogeyman, the witch that made the gingerbread house. Like they kind of touch it. Like she's a shapeshifter, and it's played by the beautiful Madison McCarthy, who she changes her appearance to get what she wants. So she kind of figured there are more flies with honey, and so she becomes this very beautiful woman when we see her in this version of the show. But it's still very dangerous. And She's very good at it.
That's interesting. So I keep thinking about like where these characters are coming from, and not necessarily the situation. It is very provocative, like the characters and the cast and that sort of thing. But it is really focused just on Jack Frost and.
I think it's an ensemble show. I think, and Bill Jackson plays Father Christmas, and he's kind of he's the daddy figure for everybody in the room.
Okay.
So, you know, it is a story of Jack Frost, but as much as it is that, it's about the relationships that he has with all these people, and relationships between families. And I always like to take a look at that around Christmas. I mean, this is probably more, I would say, more of a children's show than I've probably written before. It would be okay for, like, 10 and up, I think.
Yeah.
Little kids wouldn't quite get it, but it's probably, it would be along the lines of, like, Rise of the Guardians, I think. You know, that would be the age range that we're shooting for.
Mm-hmm. And so it's the conflict between someone who is asserting his mortality, essentially, and
yeah.
all of the rest of these people who are not.
Yes, which sounds very heady for a original show. It's presented in a very fun way, though. That's the other thing.
Well, yeah, I mean, how could that be anything other than fun, really? I mean, you know. I mean, and like, having archetypes as family, you know, like abstract entities, you know.
Yeah, well, we get to have so much fun with Father Christmas because the fact, like, he's not, like, this jolly old miser that you're used to. He's kind of Bill Jackson. Like, he's big and louder than life, and he's no nonsense, and he's got to get stuff done, and it doesn't necessarily matter how he does it. He definitely has his softer moments as well, but he's there for a purpose. He's there to get Jack to be Jack Frosty, and that's why he shows up.
Okay.
So he has his own agenda as well, and how he's going to accomplish that is...
direct conflict with Bill Jackson.
He just always feels so small when I stand on stage.
He's so big for the Brumner space. Like, I was watching him the other night, I got to sit in for a little bit, and he was, like, ducking.
We've had to limit the amount of times that he can step up the levels that they have there, because we don't want him ducking under that little apron that they have all the time. So we were like, all right, we're going to keep Bill Jackson on the floor, and then he can go up the next level, but if we can avoid it, he's not going up another one. So come to him. Be on his level. And he just looks down at you.
Which adds to the characterization, I'm sure.
I feel so tiny.
The characterization of Father Christmas was a lot more along the lines of the Ghost of Christmas Present from A Christmas Carol.
That's kind of what I'm picturing, yeah.
Yeah, well, the photo shoot reflected that as well, and that was a lot more what I wanted from it. I didn't want Santa Claus, I wanted Father Christmas. I wanted something that felt older than that.
Yeah, I mean, and that's where, for me, you know, reading the cast of characters, I'm like, there's sort of that similarity and fusion between Woden and Father Christmas, you know, and that they come from the same lineage. They're practically the same person, just from different points of view.
Yeah, exactly. And that's, I think all three of them could be, technically, like Jack Frost. I mean, all three of them definitely come from roots in the same area. So, you know, it's finding a way to separate them and give them their own personalities and giving them their own motivations really helps with that, too.
Yeah, it's weird because, like, there's, you know, thinking about the plot, I want to go more there, you know, than an interpersonal story, a family interpersonal story, which is, you know, at the heart of what this is.
Yeah.
You know, but I'm sure you'd spend some time working that out. There's probably a lot more that you'd written about the script than is actually present in the script.
Yes.
Backstory, I guess, is what I'm talking about.
Oh, backstory. Actually, I wish that there was, but unfortunately, when you can't leave a space. Right. There is backstory on the Krampus, and I'm actually extremely happy with that, where the Krampus came from, how it originated. Yeah. I think that's a really interesting take on it. I don't really want to reveal it in the podcast, because I think it's... I like the way that it goes.
It's a nice little moment that you kind of need to experience in the show. It doesn't work so well if you just describe it to somebody.
Yeah.
It's just, Bill Jackson does it, and it's beautiful.
Cool.
Yeah. But yeah, he gets a moment to kind of break it down where that person comes from. But as far as, like, and I guess we also do go into the backstory of where Woden and Jack came from.
We do. We have
actually a nice little moment, too, now that I thought about it. I guess, in my mind, it's not the whole focus of the story, but it definitely is covered.
Well, yeah, I mean, because I get the feeling, you know, like, people who aren't necessarily as into the lore, who are just going to see a Christmas show in the basement of the Brumder, you know, and not necessarily being familiar with these characters, but getting to know them over the course of the show, you know, how rendered is that going to be for them?
Oh, I'd say extremely well, because that's the other thing. It's like, you always have the Gwen character, who obviously doesn't know at all what's going on, and so you always have this one person.
She is us.
Yep. And so you always have to put, you know, in Sherlock, it was usually Mrs. Hudson.
And not Watson.
Yeah, exactly. So where somebody just goes, okay, this is what's happening, and we'll all explain it to you. And so, yes, everything, you will understand who these people are, where they came from. That's always going to be explained. Yes, I don't think that's a problem.
Cool.
That's covered.
Yeah.
It sounds like you've done a lot of work on this.
That, yep.
but actively, as it's being...
Yes, I did the costumes. I mean, it was It was supposed to go to Old World. So that was the thing. That was supposed to be their Christmas show. And then a series of things happened that it didn't end up happening this year. It is going to go next year. But then we had all these actors already cast and ready to go and who very much deserved the chance to do it. So in about it was like 12 hours where we got a new location. It was very fast.
No time at all. You sent us the message that it had fallen through at Old World.
And that I was going to work on it.
You were going to keep us posted. And then the next message we get is a few hours later, and you're like, I've talked to the Brumder. They'll let us do it as everyone's still in. And within 15 minutes,
everybody
was like, I'm in. So, and we've got a carpool coming out because Madison, who's playing the Krampus, Bridget Kelly, who is playing Gwen, and myself, are all coming from the Whitewater area out here. Because
they were close to Old World, and so that was...
I'm 10 minutes down the road from it, so yeah. This is awesome. And then we switched, and I just finished a show at the Brumner, so this isn't a bad drive, it's completely doable. So now we have a carpool set up so that we get out here and we're not all driving individual cars to Milwaukee, but it's completely workable and completely doable, and we enjoy it, and we sit in the car and run lines, and we've got an hour drive, so just... speak words.
That explains why so many of the names are so new to me.
Yeah, but they're all fantastic. Bridget, we haven't really touched on, but she's just adorable. She plays Gwen, and Gwen was supposed to be just very cute and innocent. She does all of it. She does it so well. But yeah, so it was written for Old World, and so I started talking about it with the artistic director out there last March. So I had a really good basis, but somehow, for whatever reason, whatever I was pitching didn't... like, all the basic characters are still there, but all the story arcs didn't stick. So actually, this incarnation of the script was very, very fast. It was fast getting it up, it was fast getting it to the Brumner. It was a lot of... which is why we also haven't probably done the proper PR, I think, for the show that we would normally have done. But it's a really good, cute, fun Christmas show. And different than what you're going to see. It's not really... irreverent, but it feels older. It feels like something like A Christmas Carol or The Nutcracker. It feels like very steeped in legend, as opposed to... but it's not that. So you're going to get surprises because you don't know what to expect.
Cool. Yeah, at what point did your name appear above the title?
I have no idea.
I was just looking at it earlier today just to refresh my mind. I'm like... I don't remember seeing that there before.
I feel really bad, too, because it looks like I was like, hey, you have my name goes above the billing. And I had no idea that they did that. I was unaware until probably last...
There were no fierce negotiations.
No! I was at Kelly Doherty's house, and her roommate, Alan, came in, and he was like, so when did this start being billed as Liz Shipes? And I was like, is it? He was like, oh, yeah. And we had to go online and check, and I was like, oh, God. It makes me seem ridiculous.
Yeah, because I was like, well, you know, I could see that, you know, like, that's a name I associate with. Like, I haven't seen a bad show yet.
Oh, great. Okay. I don't know. I think maybe it's been kind of a crazy year for me. Yeah. I did well, like Lady Waiting did very well, and then I also just got the runner-up for the Shepherd Express Author of the Year thing. So I don't know, I'm assuming that was probably part of the impetus behind it, but I was never asked.
Well, I mean, and having to, like, promote it, like, sort of at last minute, and there is branding in your name now, because you've been around for a long time.
Hooray!
You know, and having read, because I found out about it through a Facebook thing, and I at first I was thinking, okay, based on Brumner, it could be anything. It could be a touring show, you know. But then seeing the description, I'm like, well, all I have to do is look for the credits, and I know, okay, yeah, that's
probably it. It is interesting because it's the first show that I've done that I'm not in, that I'm not directing.
But again, what I'm saying is, it sounds like you're pretty involved for something you're not.
I as much as I can be. I've gotten to go to maybe two rehearsals.
Okay.
I was there for all of the table reads that we did. I actually read in on a couple of them because we didn't have the show fully cast at that point. We didn't have the Krampus cast at that point. But Brian Quinn, who played Inspector Lestrade, he's directing. So, I mean, he's worked with me for years, so he and I will sit and talk about it, and I'm like, this is what I will go do what I want, because I'm still a control freak.
Excuse me, I've got to go hang out with some puppets.
Yeah, I have to go over and do that. And there have been a couple of nights, because we were rehearsing relatively in the vicinity, where I would work, like, an 8-hour workday, go to a Who Killed Santa rehearsal for 4 or 5 hours, get done with that, walk over to the Bremner, watch the end of their rehearsal.
And then have us stay a little late so you could see other things, because
yeah.
You got there so late.
And then realize you're still holding the puppet.
Yeah, and just, oh crap, and have to run back.
Because that sounds crazy.
Oh, it is. It's nuts. But they're so good that I just trust them completely. And I actually do get a night off to see the show this Friday. So I get to witness it with my roommate as an audience member.
Do you think she'll like my hair this time?
I have no idea. Her biggest criticism of Corey on Lady in Waiting was like, he's got bad hair. That was all. Like, that was the text I got at intermission. She was like, "Will Scarlet, bad hair." I was like, "That's what we took from the first act. Nothing else."
So this is your second show in town?
This is my third show in town. I did A Lady in Waiting, fresh out of college, with Theater Red. Then I followed that with Murderton Abbey at the Bremner. Kelly Doherty was directing and had messaged me and said, hey, I have an audition, come do it. And I was like, all right. Came in, she cast me, I did the show. And now I'm doing this one. And I'm all kinds of excited because I have just graduated from college, so it's just nice to be doing things.
Is that an MA, an MFA?
I have a Bachelor of Fine Arts.
BFA.
So,
from
UW Whitewater.
Okay.
See if I take the grad school route after this, but right now I'm just kind of milking the whole working in Milwaukee thing.
Yeah, that's cool that you've been able to get connected this early.
Which is really nice, getting connected with certain people that are great.
Well, Angela Iannone, who's fabulous, she we were going into Lady in Waiting. She was directing production of Romeo and Juliet at Whitewater that Corey played Romeo in. And so Marcy Doherty Elston and I got to go out there and, like, scout people, and we felt so important. we were sitting in the audience going, like, we're, like, adults. And the show is, we actually ended up getting both you and Russell off that show, I think.
We did.
Yeah.
And Jake wasn't in it, but you pulled Jacob Lesh in as well.
So Whitewater's been very good to the Milwaukee theater community of late.
And currently, Madison Marie McCarthy is also a graduate from Whitewater. She has the same degree I do. And Bridget Kelly is currently going there.
So we got some Whitewater kids.
Whitewater's trying to take over the world.
Yeah, I mean, and not to get too far into background, but they've been involved in Milwaukee theater.
A long time. Complete Works right now at Chamber is all Whitewater guys, and they're fabulous. They're really good.
Yeah, it's a good program, from what I understand.
I liked it. They let me do fun things.
Yeah.
But yeah, he was just so good in Romeo and Juliet, and then when he came in for his audition for Lady in Waiting, I was blown away. And I actually didn't have a whole lot to do with the casting of Lady in Waiting, other than I got to be there. But yeah, by the time we were going into Jack Frost, I was just like, okay, I don't even need to hold auditions. Just like, email the people that I know that I want, and let's do this.
It was a couple months ago. You just sent me a random cryptic text message. Yeah. She goes, are you available in December for a show? And I was like, yes, and she goes, keep it that way, and then did not text me.
For another, like, month and a half.
For, like, a month and a half, and I was like, I don't know what's actually happening, but I'm going to keep my schedule free. So
at that point, you're looking for messages anywhere, like, you know, a sign of some sort.
Like, is it still happening? You're like...
Every time I saw her, I was like, so... thing, and she's like, oh yeah, that's happening, and that was the end of it. There was no discussion. I had no idea what was going on, and so I was just like, all right, continue to keep the schedule open. This just means I get to hang out with my 3-year-old nephew more, because I'm not going to go find a job.
To be fair, I was in the middle of the triple Sherlock at the moment, at that time when we were talking, because we did all three of them out at Old World, and it was great. We had a great time. The shows went beautifully, but the amount of stress that goes with training a brand new Sherlock and a brand new Watson and trying to put up a brand new Christmas show all at the same time is ridiculous. That is too much.
It's been pretty constant for you.
Yeah, between August to December of this year, 5 of my original works have been performed.
Okay, yeah, I just did the math on that, yeah.
Yep. Yeah. And I'm in.
Yeah.
it's just, you know, you sleep for 3 hours a night and hope for the best.
And then January comes and...
And I become a hermit. Forever.
That's cool.
Yeah. It'll be. I'm actually looking forward to that. I'm trying to figure out what's next after this, but right now I'm more focused on just watching these guys and seeing what they're gonna do. Because
and that's a theory I have about theater people is that you know one of the reasons why it's not more disturbing that you experience this and you go through this and then it just fades out is because you're so trapped and being busy with it that you don't have time to think about. Next month.
Yeah, things do have a very weird shelf life in this. You know, you spend 6 months or something working so intently on something, and then in one day, you wake up the next day and it's no more. You're not doing it anymore.
And then the next week, it's just stories.
Yeah. It's just a thing you did that one time.
Remember that one time? Yeah. What are we doing now?
Exactly, yeah. I'm starting to learn. You're only as good as what you're currently working on. Because that's the actor question at parties.
Yeah, well...
What are you doing now?
Well, yeah, as an actor, Brad. But then as a theater maker, you know.
And as a writer, too. You know, I mean, it's...
It's what are you working on now?
Yeah, it's what are you working on now? Yeah. Or, yeah, what's coming up?
Which would have been my next question.
I have a couple of irons in the fire, actually. I do. Okay. Some things.
But
that
do you have any work going on?
after?
No, I mean, just in general.
Oh. So, I'm sorry, I misunderstand. Like, you mean, like, I always have my day job. I always have to
right,
do that.
Right, No, I'm talking about, like, irons in the fire is very obscure. Very
okay, yeah, I see what you're saying. I am doing a little bit of costuming work for In Tandem. Starting in January, I have to start putting together, Uprooted is doing Cabaret for Me in March, which is a ways down the road.
They'll get around to everybody.
Yeah. They're doing Reconstructed Grimm in concert.
Ooh.
So it's songs based off of the...
Oh, okay.
Based off the... not just pictures with,
instrumental
behind
it. I was thinking maybe, like, interpretive dance or something.
No. It's, like, songs based off either the photos that we've done or songs influence the creating of the photo series and that kind of thing. And actually, I found out the drummer that they use regularly for those is my cousin. So he's going to come and do that, which is very cool. We've never gotten a chance to work together. So I'm very excited about that. So that's the next big thing. And then after that, I kind of... I have projects that I'm working on that I would like to produce, but I don't have anywhere that it's going to get done relatively soon. So there are a few plays that I'm working on, but it's nothing set in stone yet. Because I was like, 5 plays in 4 months. I think that's a lot. I think I get a break. That's my opinion.
Yeah. Cool.
But you also hit this point where people start to walk up to you and go, I want to be in your next show. You're like, okay. And they're like, this is what I think you should do. And you're like, all right, I'll think about it. No, it'd be really cool if you wrote this. Well, why don't you write it? Well, it's a lot of work. Yeah, that is.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of energy. There isn't necessarily as much money as there needs to be to capture that energy.
Well, and that stuff I don't necessarily... I mean, it would be lovely, but it doesn't necessarily matter. If there's a story that I want to tell or a show that I want to do, I will find a way to do it. It doesn't matter how much or how little money you're making. Sometimes it matters how little money you're making. Let me just say that. But if you want it bad enough, you will find a way. And even if that's, you know, sleeping for 3 hours a night for months and months at a time.
Yeah, I suppose. So the show again is?
It's called Upon a Midnight Clear, A Tale of Jack Frost.
And it runs?
It runs from
We open our preview on this Thursday, run through the weekend, and then we have two more weekends after that. I'm terrible with actual dates, so just next 3 weekends.
And you, any idea?
It opens, so the 5th.
Yes.
And then it goes through, which is this Friday, and then it goes through, I think, the 22nd or 21st.
Yeah,
it's something
around
like
that.
Yeah. All the information is on the website, MilwaukeeEntertainmentGroup.com.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, it's been fun.
Yeah.
And good luck with everything.
Thank you so much.